Welcome. My name is Unity Stokes, co-founder at Startup Health. Today we have a conversation with Kim Fisher. Kim is the Chief Impact Officer of Startup Health's Food is Medicine Moonshot. She's also the Program Director of UC Davis's Innovation Institute for Food and Health. We are going to be speaking about all the exciting things going on in today's landscape of food as medicine and the exciting opportunities for entrepreneurs, innovators, and investors. Stick around. Welcome, Kim Fisher. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Yuni?
I'm great. We're neighbors. We're both in the East Bay, California region, 10 minutes apart from each other. So it's nice to see you on Zoom. I wish we were in person.
We will be soon.
We will be soon. So just to kick things off, you have a lot of exciting elements to your background, both historically, but also what you do today. I thought we'd start with just getting to know you, but I'll rattle off a quick intro. I know you are the program director at UC Davis, the Innovation Institute for Food and Health. Is that the
Exactly.
role?
You nailed it.
Okay. And we're going to talk about a new angel network that you're setting up. We'll get into that related to food and health. You're also helping us get the Food is Medicine Moonshot going for entrepreneurs and innovators and the whole ecosystem around that at Startup Health, which we're so grateful for. And you also are involved with Breakthrough T1D. And what's your role
Yeah,
there?
so I am the chair of research for the Northern California Board of Breakthrough T1D. So in that role, my job is to understand everything that's happening in terms of research, which includes cure research as well as device research, insulin research, just to know what's going on and be able to communicate it to the community. So I go around Northern California giving talks to people who have T1D or who have loved ones with T1D and informing them about the latest research so that we can raise more money to invest more in that research.
Important work, but where I want to start is you've also been an entrepreneur
I have.
and an investor, and I think that background is really very important in all that you do because you've really had a whole spectrum of coming at innovation from building things, creating things, investing in things, researching in things, and I think that perspective is really valuable. In particular, as we think about the emerging food as medicine, food is medicine, food as health kind of category that's really been taking shape and starting to really get momentum and traction. But let's start with you. What a little bit about your background. Tell us how you even got involved in kind of the innovation landscape.
Absolutely. I started a company many years ago, not at all in this food as health, food as medicine space, but in software. And had a phenomenal experience building a company, building a business, creating something that customers loved, raising money, building a team of people who I was passionate about working with. I just loved the whole startup ride. Ended up selling that company and then managing the business incubator where I had started my company, which was the Women's Technology Cluster. It's now Ostia. And had the opportunity to then help other entrepreneurs avoid mistakes I had made as an entrepreneur, just work with them to help build their businesses, raise money, figure out their product market fit, and absolutely love that work, just working with other startups to help them get off the ground and use the experience that I had running my own company to help them hopefully do things with fewer mistakes and more speed. And I had a lot of success there, helping a lot of companies who, several who were acquired, some who raised a lot of money and got quite far. And then after I left the Women's Technology Cluster, I helped the city of San Jose build some other incubators. And I played an interim role leading both the San Jose BioCenter, which I think is called Biosphere now, as well as the US Market Access Center, which helped foreign companies set up their US sales and marketing offices. So just very involved in that entrepreneurial, innovation ecosystem for a long time. And about 5, 6 years ago, my daughter, who was 13 at the time, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And when she was in the hospital, they said to her, "Here's how you take insulin for Cheetos, and here's how you take insulin for Coca-Cola." And I just was both she and I were just taken aback by the way people talked about food in this space where food was everything in terms of impacting your health. And so I became really involved in just understanding how food works in our bodies, how food affects our metabolism. I think when somebody has type 1 diabetes, it's like a microscope of what food's doing to all of us. And so when I heard about the Innovation Institute for Food and Health at UC Davis, I was like, this is an opportunity to really to work where I'm spending all my time anyway, and took the job there. And it was a really great combination of my passion in food for health with looking at all of these incredible researchers at UC Davis who were interested in not just doing the research and putting publications on the shelf, but in getting things out there into the world for human impact. And that's where I can help, working with a lot of really brilliant scientists and professors and postdocs and PhDs at Davis. And I don't have that background, but I have the background of bringing things to market. So I'm working with them to help them commercialize their businesses and get out into the world to have human impact in food and health. And at Davis, I'm also working with big companies now that I think we're seeing a lot of big companies now say, oh, we need to create healthier food products. And so that's really exciting too, that I get to work with some of these bigger companies that will also have an impact. I think meeting the innovators and wanting to maybe acquire the innovators.
Right.
It's a nice synergy.
What did you love most about being an innovator, being an entrepreneur? And then on the flip side, what were the biggest challenges of that experience? And you've been around so many cycles and you've seen so many other innovators that you are also helping foster. But from your own perspective, what was really the most exciting aspects of being an entrepreneur and a builder yourself?
To me, the most exciting aspects of being an entrepreneur are the ability to get things done quickly to make a difference and to really run with things. And that's where I like to live. I don't do very well with big bureaucracy and slow decision making. And there's a lot that we need to get done. And I feel like entrepreneurs and innovators and just being part of a startup, we have the opportunity to build quickly and to make an impact quickly, but also to build teams around ourselves. I've always said I love to hire people who are much more capable than I am, just to have that opportunity to define who you work with and to work with really smart people who are all passionate about creating something is part of my joy. And then like even fundraising, I love because I never feel like I'm fundraising. I feel like I'm just telling people about something that's going to make an impact in the world. And when you do that, I feel like the money follows.
Yeah, and they either align with your mission and plan and purpose or not, and it becomes a good filter. And so take us into academia, working with big partners, research institutes, even big foundations. These are sometimes not the fastest moving organization, but it seems like people like you can bring your entrepreneurial verve and energy to these things. What was that transition like going from building software to some of these other types of experiences?
I feel very blessed that I'm in this institute at Davis that's really focused on, we are like the interface with the outside world. So whether it's investors or big companies or startups, we really do work a little bit outside of the bureaucracy that is the UC system or UC Davis. So we have lots of opportunities to figure out what to do and to just go do it. But for sure, it's different. And I'm working with some very big companies and big foundations, as you mentioned, and things definitely move at a different pace, but they're so important to have those partners and to get them aligned. So for me, it's a new challenge, and I like new challenges.
What's the current mission of the Institute, and what kind of defines success over the coming years?
So the mission of the Institute is to make the food we love healthier for all people and the planet. And the reason we stated it that way, to make the food we love healthier for all people and the planet, is we don't believe that people can really change their behaviors all that much, and that it's up to us to really put in front of the consumer something they love and just have it be healthier for them. And that's always been my dream as a mom of a type 1 diabetic, is that the choices that we all have that are in front of us are things that we're excited about eating and can still have that sort of passion, even that cultural affiliation with, but not be poisoning ourselves with those same products. Really kind of aligns with where I want the world to be. And the people that I work with at UC Davis have the capability to make it happen. The faculty director of our institute, Justin Siegel, he works in protein and enzyme discovery, and he has created some incredible companies. One he created it's a enzyme you take if you accidentally consume gluten and you have celiac. And he started that company out of his lab, sold it to Takeda Pharmaceuticals for $330 million. And it's such an important solution for people who have celiac to have that opportunity to not have that distress if, you accidentally ingest gluten. He also started a company out of his lab called Amplify, which makes the protein you consume more bioavailable to you to use for muscle synthesis and growth. It's interesting because protein is such a big trend, big fad right now. But you can consume too much protein and it doesn't get used by your body. It actually putrefies in your stomach and cause kidney disease. But if you can get that protein to work for you, this is why older people need more protein, is because they're not actually using it. So if you can get that protein to work for you, this company he created has created something that is currently a supplement, but we're hoping to integrate into food to help us digest the protein that we consume, especially plant-based proteins. So those are some of the really cool things that we're able to develop out of Davis. And it's really fun to be working with people who have that kind of scientific expertise and knowledge and are taking advantage of all the new tools that are available.
It's a good transition to. I know we've had this conversation, and I have this conversation frequently with a lot of entrepreneurs as well as investors, but there's so many different lenses on what food as health means, or food as medicine, or food is medicine, or food technologies, all the way to the types of innovation you were just describing, which is quite extraordinary, to there's food trackers and actual like software and apps, and there's things that tie directly either invasively or non-invasively. There's wearables. There's just a whole category. How do you think about the landscape? And obviously there's also the whole policy side of things, and but just in terms of the innovation sphere, how should we all be thinking about the category? Is it actually 10 different categories? Is it one aligned group of innovation? How are people talking about this now?
I think people are talking about it a lot of different ways. I don't think there's exact definitions yet, and I know you said both food is health and food is medicine, and I think they are a little different.
Correct.
I don't know if we talked about yet the Food and Health Angel Network that we just created out of UC Davis, but it's a standalone entity. And we spent a lot of time thinking about what is our investment thesis and what do we want to invest in this food and health sphere. And there's a lot of misunderstanding. Some people think because we're out of UC Davis that we're investing in drones to make sure that agricultural settings have enough water. And there's a lot of things that I think food and health is not. I think we've decided that where agriculture is actually relevant is where the soil microbiome actually impacts the gut microbiome and impacts the health of our food and how it impacts us. But there's these barriers we've had to form around how we're defining what our thesis is at the Angel Network, which is we're talking food is food and medicine at Startup Health and food and health in our Angel Network. But we created an investment thesis after much discussion that we're investing in early stage companies that apply science, data, and technology to improve metabolic health, performance, and healthy longevity. And we broke it down into two categories. And one is it's a core competency and a sweet spot of the work we do at UC Davis. Our angel investment network is investing more broadly than UC Davis companies. We're investing in companies nationally. But at UC Davis, we do a lot of work in understanding food at the molecular level. And evidently, 99% of what's in our food, we don't even know what it is. When you talk about food and health, it's just a fascinating thing. We call it the dark matter of food. And at the Innovation Institute for Food and Health, we're funded by the Rockefeller Foundation and the American Heart Association on a project called the Periodic Table of Food Initiative, where we're looking at understanding what's in our food at the molecular level. And we should be able to, once we understand the molecules that are in our food, figure out next generation bioactives and use AI to figure out where some of these molecules in our food might have certain health benefits and be able to really create food as medicine. Or say, if you have IBD, you'll need to eat cherries because they have these different molecules that impact your health. Or maybe you'll design new foods that combine all of the different molecules that are required to combat IBD. So there's a lot happening that wasn't even possible before in understanding sort of bioactives and using AI to turn molecular science into scalable foods. So that's one of the areas that we're looking at in our angel network is ingredient and product innovation. And then the second area is what you just talked about, metabolic health solutions. So biosensors, not just CGMs, but the ability to track other biomarkers in our blood, to track them in really easy ways. I know you have some companies in startup health already that are using non-invasive sensors to track different metabolic markers, data platforms, programs that integrate nutrition into healthcare, food as medicine. I know a lot of people think of it as food delivery and making sure that people get the food that they need for who they are. But we need the sensors then to understand who they are, or at least get information about what different people's health issues are, or I guess disease issues as well, so that we can get the right foods to them. We've defined it as ingredient and product innovation and metabolic health solutions, but I think you could break that down a lot of ways. It's all pretty broad.
And there's a few other layers here because it seems like there's, for the first time in maybe decades, there's almost a cultural renaissance for just paying attention to food in a new way. It's in our culture, it's in the politics, it's in, I think, every aspect of our lives in a way that even 10, 20 years ago it was not. And then I also think you mentioned AI and what that's unlocking in terms of science and some of the other areas that now are impacting the innovation in the sphere. What's your take in terms of where we are in terms of an innovation cycle as it relates to food impacting our health? Are we entering a new, I guess, era of opportunity than, say, maybe 10 years ago when you started really paying attention to this arena?
100%. Like you said, it's in the news. People are aware of it. But I think the other thing that's really given for the literal and metaphorical shot in the arm is GLP-1s and other incretin hormones that have come on the market. And I think that is something over 15% of Americans have now tried these drugs. 92% of Americans are metabolically unhealthy, which to me means we're at a tipping point where something has to change. And these drugs are really creating consumer pull on the big companies to change. And so the big companies that we work with at UC Davis are looking at the startups to figure out where the innovation is going to come from because they don't have research budgets. They don't have the capability to innovate the way these startups do. And so I think there is a huge wave happening now where there's going to be a lot of opportunity for startups because people are caring, people are wanting healthier food, and the big companies are. I think there have been waves in time where big companies have said, let's create healthier food, but then no one else does. And then they lose market share and they get pressure to add more salt and sugar and make food more addictive. And I think this is the first time ever that I can think of where everybody's coming along. We have more big consumer goods companies coming to us at UC Davis than we can even manage, who are saying, help us figure out how to provide healthier solutions to the market. And then they want to know about all the startups we're working with. And they want to learn from them. They want to partner with them. They want to acquire them. So there is so much happening right now. This is a huge opportunity and a huge wave. At the same time, one of the reasons we started the Angel Network now is food venture capital has really gone into a downturn right now. There were a lot of investments in cultured meat and plant-based meats that didn't do well. And I think we learned that people won't eat differently just for the environment, but I think they will eat differently for their health and they'll make different decisions. And I think we're going to see a cyclical turnaround. And the reason we're funding companies at the angel level now is because there's not a lot of venture capital available, but there's incredible consumer pull and demand from big companies for healthier foods. And then, as you said, the AI and the ability to even look at food at the molecular level and understand bioactives and new ways of using fermentation technology. Like there are capabilities coinciding with consumer pull that I think are making this an incredible opportunity. And the only piece that's missing is that early stage funding, and that will come back.
So it's interesting. First of all, I'm so happy you're creating this angel investor network, very much needed. This seems to be a typical trend where sometimes it takes a cycle or two and you see a big win or two that then starts to attract more investors into the category. Do you foresee, or what would your message be to investors about the opportunity? I know I just saw, I think it was this morning in the New York Times about some of the challenges around diabetes in Africa, and it's just at a whole new global scale now. This is happening at a global level. It's impacting billions of people. To me, there's a significant market opportunity that is both impacting all of our health, but it seems should be an investment opportunity.
No, I think there is an investment opportunity. The question is just where investors are, where are they going to find the money to invest, especially if they recently made investments in companies that didn't do well. So that's where I think there's just going to be a little bit of a lag. But I think there's a lot of people who are excited about, like you said, making a difference globally. There are people who are interested in healthy longevity as well that have money. And so I think we're going to see investors that maybe weren't even in this space come into this space as we look at some of the solutions that we can create. Food, just plain food, a healthier soda or something like that didn't used to be something that would get acquired for $1 billion by Pepsi, and now it's happening. So I think that we're seeing a lot of opportunity and a lot of change. And as you said, it's not just in the US, and the uptake of GLP-1s in the US is huge, and our metabolic health crisis is huge, but it's actually bigger in other places. And yeah, this is a global problem, and we need to create global solutions, and there's a market for it because people are now, it's the writing's on the wall and people care. People don't, yeah, they want to live. They want to live
They
healthy
want to
lives.
live.
Yeah.
A few comments. First of all, one of the things that I love about this whole area is, at least as we think about health moonshots at Startup Health, the intersection of food really aligns with all of them. Healthy lifespan, metabolic, cardiometabolic, our T1D moonshot, they're all really interrelated in so many ways for obvious reasons. What types of innovation are you seeing that is exciting? And where are the gaps? What do you wish you were seeing more of? Or, hey, let's get the bullhorn out to more innovators of all types. These are types of areas we need the greatest minds and innovators of our time to be really focusing on.
I'm going to have a really fun paper to share with you soon. I had the opportunity to go to the National Science Foundation and meet with researchers and companies from around the country. And our mission was to figure out what's the world going to look like in terms of food and health in 20 years. And therefore, from a government perspective, like what kinds of grant proposals should they put out so that we can start creating that future? And I would say the big topics there are the same topics that my answer to you would be about what should people be looking at now. I think that precision nutrition needs to be the future. I look at a family and what they eat and how it impacts people differently, right? Like everybody has different needs, and we're able to start tracking what different people need and figuring out how we can deliver food to people, get food to people in a cost-effective way, and also make it be what they specifically need is, I think, a really important problem to solve. There's a lot of different ways to solve that problem. I saw some really cool companies at the Consumer Electronics Show, including a mirror. You wake up, you look in the mirror, and it tells you like all of your biomarkers and like what you're deficient in and what you should eat tomorrow and eat that day. And so if we can passively collect data, maybe we pee and tells us that we're missing certain nutrients, and then breakfast is delivered to replenish those nutrients. Like, those are the kind of sort of futuristic solutions that we talked a lot about when I had the opportunity to go to the NSF. And I think the big challenge is going to be, how do we make that global and scalable? I had a great opportunity at the Future Food Tech Conference in San Francisco last week to talk to somebody from Safeway who has figured out a way to get Medicaid to cover meals, not meals, more like fresh produce and meat and real food, to get that delivered to people who have health issues. And but the box for a type 1 diabetic might be different than a box for somebody with IBD, that somebody with celiac. I think understanding that we all have different needs and figuring out a way, that's a partial big company, partial policy solution. But I think there are ways that startups can be thinking about creating that future too. We envisioned at this conference, we wake up and the family, or basically it's not waking up, like the family, it's dinner time, and the family all has their different issues, their different needs. The kids have maybe been more active than the adults, and a pizza gets delivered to the door, and everybody gets delivered in their slice a delicious piece of pizza that delivers each of them the individual nutrients that they need for replenishment and a good night's sleep. That's a little bit of a visioning, dreaming exercise, but it's interesting.
Well, I was just going to ask you, like, take us into the future where you're an optimist. Where do you realistically hope that we'll be in 10, 20 years in a way that is it the actual food is different? Is it the mirrors and tools and technologies around us that are guiding us in real time? Is it some kind of, are there new medicines, actual pills? Is it some kind of collection of all of that? But ultimately, we're somehow healthier because of what we're ingesting and how we're powering our bodies.
Yes, and I think all of that is the direction we're heading in. And my most importantly to me, and everything that I do and everything that I work for, is that when we go buy food, the options available to us are nourishing our bodies and not making us sicker. The Rockefeller Foundation had this just mind-boggling statistic that we spend $1.1 trillion growing, distributing, and consuming food. And then we spend $1.1 trillion fixing the health issues caused by our food. And so if we could take that money and move it into innovation so that we're not creating a problem, I think that would be what I'd like to see in the future.
Wow. Thank you for doing everything that you do to inspire the ecosystem, to support the ecosystem. Where can people learn more about the Angel Network, the work you're doing at UC Davis? And obviously, you can learn more at startuphelp.com about our Food is Medicine Moonshot. But where can people go? We'll put links in the show notes.
Awesome. The Food and Health Angels is at fhangels.org. And you can go there. And if you're interested in, we're trying to make it easy for people to become investors in this space, because, like I said, there's a dearth of capital available right now. We let people join who, some of the people in the network are willing to write checks for $1 million. But as long as you're interested in writing a check for $10,000, we welcome you as an investor, and we pool the capital for the startup. So it's one line on their cap table and easy for them. And startups can go to that website too, fhangels.org, and apply for funding. And otherwise, the Innovation Institute for Food and Health has a much longer URL. So you can just Google Innovation Institute for Food and Health, UC Davis, to find more information about that organization.
Awesome. Beginning of a journey. There's so much work to do. We need innovators. We need entrepreneurs. We need all the customers, stakeholders, policymakers, everybody in this
Yeah.
journey together so that we can solve all the moonshots because food is really paramount to all of this.
Yeah. And I like that you said that, because I'm really excited to be part of Startup Health and helping build this Food as Medicine moonshot, which I think, I love the adjacency to the metabolic health and T1D moonshots, because I'm passionate about all of that. But I think adding those people and getting those people involved, policymakers and others who are interested in creating this future, I think would be really great, in addition to interesting startups.
Thank you, Kim. See you soon.
Yeah, thanks, Unity.
And finally, an invitation to all of the extraordinary health transformers. Whether you are a startup, someone building the future of health, or whether you are an investor, funder, or buyer of the solutions out there in the marketplace, this is an invitation to you to join the Startup Health member community. Learn more at startuphealth.com. Look forward to hopefully seeing you soon.